synthesizer goes like this. Well, I learned to crawl in Wichita, and up and ran in Michigan. I followed the girl who stole my heart, left alone in Chicagoland. I left there with the blues. I didn't have that much to lose. Woo-hoo. I went down to New Orleans town to get my baby back.
Well, thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show, and you're listening to episode number 115. Tonight I sat back with Garrick Rawlings, a Prescott-based musician with an interesting story we kind of rambled all about in the conversation. Also sitting in was Leslie Earl Lyman, a frequent guest and contributor here on the Mile High Show. The three of us sat down as we talked and ate and drank at Gabby's Grill in Prescott Valley. The good folks over there taking care of us, including owners Jim and Kelly Cabral. You can check out all the info on Gabby's Grill at gabbysgrill.com. They're located on Park Avenue in Prescott Valley, right there by the Harkins Theater and the Entertainment District and all that good stuff there. Garrick is a musician and storyteller and open micer and man about town in Prescott. So we talked to him about his history, some of the folks he's ran into over the years. We had a drop-in conversation on the phone with Teddy Leonard of Prescott Pro Sound, who was sitting across the bar from us. We didn't get him on mic, but you know what? Check back on milehighshow.com to the archives and search Teddy Leonard. He's been on a couple of times, including way back in the first few episodes. I always enjoy talking with Teddy. This is my first time sitting down with Garrick. I've met him and talked with him over the past few months trying to set up a show, and we were finally able to do that. Interesting guy. A lot of fun stories. We kind of went all over the place, but hey, that's what the Mile High Show is all about, sitting back and getting to know somebody. The intro music for today's show was taken from Garrick's YouTube page. Check him out. There's a link right there on the show notes to milehighshow.com. Just Passing Through is one of those. I'm not sure which one's on the intro, which one's on the outro, but we have I Don't Care What You Say and Just Passing Through, both performed by Garrick. They were both taken from clips on the AM Light Show from a few years back with, is it Arlene Mershot, I think is who that is. Anyway, that was a cable access show here in Prescott, and we ripped the audio right out of there from Garrick's YouTube channel. So check it out. There's a lot of good clips on there. Today's show is brought to you by Amazon. Use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com to do all your online shopping. What that does is take you to your normal Amazon or Amazon Prime login, and you log in like normal. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but it does let the good folks at Amazon know that you got there through us, and they give us a little kickback at the end of the month. So you're going to do that online shopping anyway. You're going to go to Amazon. You're going to shop away and spend your money. This is what we ask you to do. Use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com and bookmark it as your Amazon page, or put a little desktop icon for your online shopping. And it just takes you in. You log in like normal. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but Amazon gives us a little kickback. We are also brought to you today by Audible. Use the code MILEHIGH at checkout when you go to audible.com. There's also an Audible link right there at milehighshow.com. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on your phone, on your computer, on your tablet, wherever you listen to audio content. They have books, magazine articles, lectures, podcasts, all kinds of stuff there. And when you use that Audible link at milehighshow.com, shop away, you get a free audio download and a free 30-day subscription by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Again, free 30-day trial and a free audio download from Audible by using the Audible link at milehighshow.com and the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Let's see what they got that might be fun to listen to. Garrick talked a little bit about Woody Guthrie through there, some other folk singers, including Ramblin' Jack Elliott and a few others. How about this? An audiobook, Bound for Glory, the autobiography of Woody Guthrie, by Woody Guthrie, narrated by Arlo Guthrie. 3 hours of Woody Guthrie tales. You can get that for free by using the Audible link at milehighshow.com and using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. So check that out. Use that that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. Use that Audible link at milehighshow.com. Go to milehighshow.com and use the support us, support the show button. You can even donate directly by using your PayPal button there. Any help you can give us would be greatly appreciated. Also, use that iTunes link. Go on our iTunes page and give us a rating and a review. All that information is available at milehighshow.com. Also, stop by Gabby's Grill and support that great bar and grill in Prescott Valley. And above all, ramble around town, find Garrick, and listen to him play, listen to him sing, listen to him tell some stories. You can do that right now on our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Maybe someday I'll settle down, but bound to dig rambling around. Oh, maybe someday I'll settle down, but bound to dig rambling around. Oh, maybe someday I'll settle down, but bound to take rambling around, baby.
Like the Mediterranean brother.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think that he's a freak, man.
Says the white boy from the South.
I'm like, you know, dude, I didn't say that I wasn't a freak. I just takes one to know one, man. You know,
as far as what I try and do here is basically just get to know folks, hear some stories. From when I started this a couple years ago, your name popped up as somebody I should talk to, just as an interesting guy around town. Get in there nice and snug. We're five minutes in.
He's been recording for forever.
Give me the Reader's Digest capsule version of your history. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
My personal history?
Oh, God.
Oh, hell. I didn't realize this show was in such dire straits.
That's like a Mishner book, man.
No, I'm I was born in Wichita, Kansas, but I mostly grew up in Sturgis, Michigan, which is southwestern Michigan, right on the Indiana border, literally halfway between Chicago and Detroit. On the old highway US 12.
Yeah.
Before they built the interstate, 94, that went through Kalamazoo. Then I lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Then I lived in suburban Chicago. But the family, my mom is, they're Greek immigrants to Chicago, directly from Greece to Chicago during and post World War II. There was the communists were at war in Greece at the time, so there was a lot of Greeks that left the country. And my dad's side, they're just wide as you can be, from Central Prairie, Illinois, Jacksonville, Franklin, which is right near Springfield,
Mom born in Greece and came here, or
mom
her parents?
Was born here.
Okay.
But her dad was born in Greece, and her paternal grandparents were born in Greece.
Gotcha. So she was the first.
So on her dad's side, she was first born here. On her mom's side, she was second generation.
Nice, nice.
Like that. And then on dad's side, they were all typical, boring English, French, German, Irish.
Now, how'd they meet?
White people. In Chicago, on Rush Street, they were whoring around.
Which is what you do on Rush Street. I'm just, you know, for the record. I'm not going to lie.
I wasn't around then. That's
just a bigger Whiskey Row? Is
that's
that
not how they described it, but Rush, that's how I digested it.
Rush Street Rush Street is like, it's a upper, I don't want to say upper class, but it's kind of like a big entertainment district in Chicago.
Well, it's on the north side. It's more even Division Street. Yeah. But
but it's not on the bad north side.
North side was right, but it was literally right next to Cabrini Green, which was bizarre until they turned that down. But the north side was Cabrini Green.
Explain
a part of the one of the more infamous project buildings, like all the cities had. St.
The
Louis, Evans
were in Cabrini Green.
Yeah, yeah. Correct.
Good times.
Yeah. That's where it was.
JJ.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was growing up for you? Big family, small family, brothers, sisters? What do you got?
We were the first generation of the small family after big families, which is kind of sad. Like my mom, on dad's side, his mom was one of six sisters, which is really the only reason I ever came to Prescott, one of those sisters. And talk about Americana. They were there were six sisters. They were Oxleys was their last name. No brothers. The poor guy, the poor farmer dad just kept trying. You know, back then they needed a big family to run the farms. And he just kept having girl after girl. My grandma was Gertrude, Gertie, as they called her. She was second
That's
to
a
the
nice
oldest.
Midwestern name, Gertie.
And the oldest was Bernadine, Aunt Bernie. The next was Margaret, which is pretty normal. But then after that, it was Aunt Wib. W-I-B. Probably only 10 or 15 years ago I figured out Aunt Wib, Aunt Wilma. It was Wilhelmine.
Ah, gotcha.
It was Aunt Wibby. Aunt Wibby, Aunt Wib, Aunt Wilma. Even Wilma was short for Wilhelmina or Wilhelmine. And then after that, it was Midge. I only knew her as Aunt Midge, which is Mildred.
Yeah.
And then my great Aunt Dixie was who I knew here in Prescott when I lived in L.A. for 20 years. I first came to Prescott when I was in college at Western Michigan in Kalamazoo. And my dad was doing a job in he was in San Bernardino, and he bought a Goldwing motorcycle.
Nice.
And I was in college, and he flew me out there to ride his motorcycle back to Indiana for him. And that was the first time I came to Prescott. And that's
just
when I fell
through,
in love with it. Yeah, well, my aunt was here.
Gotcha.
And her sons and all that.
What time
but
frame
the
is this?
So
what
this would have been late 80s, 87, I think. 86, maybe. The palace was still the palace.
Yeah.
It was old school. I saw the last bit of gold school. And then from there, I went to Durango to visit Cousin Rusty
now,
up there.
Back up. So what do you mean? The palace was the palace. I only know it from what it is right now.
Well, like,
what was it like? What do you mean? What's different from now as opposed to then?
Well, as I remember it, kind of like how, well, I'm thinking of pre-fire Birdcage.
Yeah.
Like how Birdcage was to Matt's at that last sort of when it was popular. It was, you take it back 10 years, the palace was like that. The Matt's was like that to Palace.
Gotcha, okay. Because
the palace had a balcony stage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the whole place was a bar. It was a honky-tonk.
It was the wildest
honky-tonk.
Less than, say,
it was not
the touristy.
A sit-down. Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
They totally ruined it as far as
no, it was a
from
venue.
My perspective.
It was a venue. Molly Hatchet played there, man.
Matt's was like the stepchild of the palace.
Nice.
Was because the place was twice as wide or more and deep, and the stage is bigger.
Where was the stage
bands.
Compared to what the layout
they took
is
it
now?
Out. It
up same, by that stairway?
relative to where it is in Matt's, sort of the same place.
Gotcha. Okay.
If you go in the palace.
When you go in the palace, if you look at the room, you can kind of see where, like, where it would be. There's those stairs where that office is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't see it, but like, I had someone show me pictures of it and stuff. You're like, well,
you watch Junior Bonner and see it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but I had someone show me pictures of it that was here. You will not believe what this place used to look like in the 80s. You know, I was like, wow. And then someone showed me pictures of the 4th of July festivities on the square back in the 70s, and I was like, wow. You know, so unrecognizable, Prescott. Unrecognizable.
So you're just cutting through, delivering a bike back home, and you stop in to see the aunt and the cousins?
Yep.
Yeah? How long did you stay?
Just overnight, I think. That's a whole other podcast, that story.
Why is that?
But
dive in. We got no time limit.
Oh no!
Or is that the one that we can't censor? That we gotta let your tongue go wild.
You do your
the X-ray,
when you're on Sirius with doing the Howard
Stern.
It was the first time I met two of my cousins, and we met a couple of we partied all up on Whiskey Row. Yeah. The bars were all different. Took everybody home, and me and Cousin Herbie, we're done. We went to the Jack in the Box, which is no longer there in business, but it was there then. We picked up two chicks at the freaking Jack in the Box at like 2:30 in the goddamn morning. And went out to, and it turned out, oh my God, it was one of those
good times.
One of those nights,
wake up when the sun comes up. Things. Parents of one of them finding us at Dixie's house.
Yeah, that's
somehow
always exciting.
I know of you more mostly as a musician. Is that what you've been doing most of your life?
I've always been a musician. Yeah. It goes in and out with the varying needs of income and jobs and all that garbage.
Were you playing as a kid growing up?
Yeah, I started. I was about midway through high school. I think it was the end of my sophomore year when my buddy Scott Tom moved to town from Sturgis, Michigan, from suburban Chicago, and he had an electric guitar, and that was all it was. Yeah. I was ahead of my time musically. I was buying 45s and albums as like a fifth grader, so I was really interested in music and in hard rock at the time, and then that summer I worked in the cornfields. There's all the soil around there is really sandy, so it's really big in the seed corn.
Yeah,
where you have to detassel. It's cross pollination. It really helped me out later on when I learned how to grow pot. But then Monsanto took over. But we'll leave that to the Neil Young podcast.
So you meet this guy in high school?
Yeah, and then, so that summer I worked in the cornfields and bought my
what
first
year
electric
we talking?
Guitar. This would have been...
Late 70s? 81?
81-ish, probably.
When did you graduate? What graduating class?
I graduated high school in 83.
83? I was 84. Yeah. Yeah. Less, 72, 71?
I'm sorry, I missed that. 72.
The oldest senior we'd ever known.
What year did you graduate high school?
79.
Oh, okay. I know it's 71, 72. What are you, 51-ish, 52?
I just turned 51 last month.
Yeah, I just hit 50.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, for not dying? Yeah, that's always something to do.
Pretty much what it's down to, isn't it?
Hey, don't worry, Matt. If you keep trying, you'll get there.
Only child, or did you have?
I have a younger brother, about 3.5 years younger.
So, where were you getting your musical influences from?
Who knows? It was just mostly all me. There was a little bit there. Mom did have, and I have it today, the "She Loves You" single. By the Beatles on Swan. Because, you know, that's how smart record companies are. The United States. Beatles were on EMI in England, which was Capitol in the United States. But Capitol United States thought, we don't need the Beatles on Capitol in the United States. They're no good. So Swan issued She Loves You. And the one before that, I Want to Hold Your Hand, I think.
But
so you got the original press from
Mom. She had also the Beach Boys Summer Days, which was the one right before Pet Sounds. So that was the only rock and roll I had. She was more into the Engelbert Humperdinck.
Gotcha.
And Tom Jones. And the old man was a Sinatra Dean Martin guy, which I appreciated later.
Nice.
But it was, but the initial exposure, and I've talked on this before, where I grew up in rural Michigan, there was no even rock, and even in that era, there was no good rock radio. Even the
really?
AM was crappy. But coming into Chicago, I say, I think in Chicago, I start talking like I'm in Chicago. But the at WLS, the AM radio station there, and the other their biggest competitor back at the time, WCFL. I mean, that was the height of AM radio. You know, the early 70s into the mid 70s. That was good radio.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the kids today know that radio. They don't know anything from 5, 10, or 15, or 20, or 30 years ago, but they all know that radio. And then as I got my own radio in the FM, then it was still the tail end of the beautiful FM era. Where the DJs would play a half an album or a whole album at
so
night.
They can sneak out the and loop, get stoned.
The Loop and XRT and MET and MET at the other one. Anyway, the,
I think the Loop.
I would
the
go there. I didn't even know
gone,
about Led Zeppelin. The Loop's still there. They're kind of. They all kind of went. Yeah. But XRT, I think, is still a good one. But that's when I mean, I was of the era. You will get it. I mean, REO, who were around even a lot earlier, but it was REO, Styx, Kansas, Journey, et cetera, was sort of the rock bands of that era. But hearing that rock radio from Chicago is where I discovered the Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And the Who and all that. But then my Uncle George, my favorite Uncle George Pappas, the greatest car jipper in the whole Chicagoland era. And that was the car stereo era, too, you know, where it was business. So he had. But they, you know, people and used car, all the things you find. They had all those horrible early cassettes that are of the worst tape stock ever. You know, you had to buy the album and get some TDK or Maxo and then record it because the tapes, it wasn't. But I never. Live at Leeds and Who's Next? Stones, Hot Rocks. And what was the good one? The blues one from France, Exile on Main Street.
Yeah.
Though I mean, I never to be that. Those came into my ear like holy.
And you got
of God,
you got turned on to that from your Uncle George.
Yeah. So I got
so
into
that's
hard
your
rock
influence.
Electric.
That's
and
then you got that uncle that's
and then that, he
guiding
wasn't
you
musical,
through it.
But he was the connection. Yeah. He was a doo-wop 50s guy, which I love. But then that Morrison, but I was always very curious. So it's like, where did Zeppelin get this? And right there in Chicago, it's from Chess. It's from
from the blues.
Muddy Waters
yeah.
and Howling Wolf and
so
Willie Dixon. And
tell everybody about Cowboy Jack Elliott.
Well, there's Cowboy Jack Clement.
I'm sorry,
Ramblin' Jack Elliott.
Okay, whatever. Just tell everybody
like
about that.
Just busting Les's balls.
Okay. See, the best way to get him to do that stuff is get it wrong, and then he'll correct you. They'll correct you, and then you get what you want out of him. Like
what about Ramblin' Jack? My path to Ramblin' Jack. Well, like I said, I was in. All I ever really wanted to do was play guitar.
Yeah.
I always wrote and stuff, but I don't sing that good. I was forever in search of my Mick Jagger or Robert Plant.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
In search of your lead guy?
Yeah, I was
guy?
A big Joe Perry and,
gotcha.
And Jimmy Page guy, but I also
well, when
liked
you
the Bomb, big MC5 and Stooges guy, the Michigan stuff. But then I love the old blues guys and the bebop jazz
But you
guys.
You pick up a guitar for the first time in high school? Your buddy?
Yeah. It was all rock. It was REO Glive, Get What You Play For, man. That was a Cheap Trick. It's good stuff, man. Judas Priest and all that from that era. Anyhow, but I always loved acoustic stuff. I mean, who didn't love the acoustic stuff of Zeppelin? I mean, going to California, and That's the Way, and Tangerine, and yada-da-da-da. But lots of people love that, but they never explored that music. And then later on, you find Steve Earle, and then you find... And then you find Guy Clark, and then you find John Prine and Willie Nelson, and Merle Haggard, and and Steve Goodman and Towns Van Zandt.
The guys that influenced the guys that you listen to.
Yeah, I'm never satisfied with, because I'm always like, because once you find, well, they're really not that original. They just, and there's no, that's not a criticism. That's,
well, no, that, and that's the thing. You find somebody that you like listening to, and then you want to find out who influenced them, where they're drawn from.
Yeah. And everything you do is adapting everything you learn into your own deal. Zeppelin was a little weird in how they claimed they wrote some stuff. It was direct ripoffs. But that, and then, you know, huge in a Neil Young and in a Johnny Cash. And
now you've done it with the Led Zeppelin thing, you know.
No, now Ramblin' Jack Elliott, he's a folk singer. He was never much of a writer. He's only written a handful of songs, but they're really good. But Jack's 80 whatever years old. But he was the last guy.
He was part of the Greenwich Village scene.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he was there in New York. And
actually, he predated the Greenwich Village scene, and he was in Europe when they're. It came in. Anyway, I'll tell you, the timeline of it is, think of somebody else that this is analogous to. Ramblin' Jack Elliott is a short little Jewish guy born Elliot Adnipose, son of a Brooklyn doctor.
Yeah.
At the age of, I admire the hell, at the age of 13 or 14 or 15, so anyway, a rodeo is in Madison Square Garden in Manhattan. He goes over there, hooks up with the rodeo, says he's a runaway. Because he wants to join the rodeo, and there's guys that play cowboy guitar. And he actually goes on the road with the rodeo, and then his parents are like, Jesus Christ. I mean, they weren't bad parents. Jack? Didn't understand that. Like, I wish I had the balls to think that way. When he's like, they had ads out, and one of the guys finally, hey, you know, you need to go back home. Finish school. You want to come on the road with a
13-year-old kid hanging out with carnies.
Come back. It's basically, same thing as a carny. And so he does it and goes back to the rodeo. Somewhere he discovers what he got through his music.
Yeah.
This is late 40s, getting into early 50s.
Right after the war.
And he's blown away by Woody Guthrie, but Woody Guthrie lives in Coney Island, so he goes and... you know, hey!
A ballsy kid.
And he hangs out with Woody Guthrie for the next 3 years and starts mimicking and playing... And even Woody says, and Arlo would co-sign it, he goes, Jack can sing and play like Woody better than Woody ever could.
Yeah.
But Jack couldn't ever, I mean, Woody's created it all. But pretty much, that's the other thing. And Dylan Afeccionado's on to Zeppelin. It's a tradition people are appalled by if they don't get it. Most of these melodies and tunes and chord progressions are just adapted from... ancient Irish or ancient Celtic or
everything's
Celtic.
Got a root,
and especially Woody in gospel, he just put his own lyrics to it.
When'd you meet Jack?
So we're getting there. He said I had time.
He doesn't know you like I do,
and so we're still friends. So far, anyway. So. Jack does one last trip with Woody out to the West Coast, and he tells it in one of his great songs, 912 Greens. That's it. He doesn't see Woody again for a while. Jack actually steals his wife, June, from the back of Strother Martin's. No, it was Dean.
I think that the famous thing here is that he stole his wife from
James
somebody.
James Dean, Jesus Christ. Like anyway, they go to Europe, and then I'm trying to speed it up. What's going on in Europe now is the skiffle thing.
Yeah,
the Beatles haven't happened. Dylan hasn't happened, even before they got into the blues, they got into that American folk, the Weavers.
Yep,
and Pete Seeger and all that shit, and then Jack goes over there, and he's doing those cowboy songs and the blues, Lead Belly and Woody style.
Yeah.
And there's stories of Mick Jagger and Paul McCartney. Everybody saw him as kids.
Wyman was in skiffle bands at 10 years old. Yeah.
There. And they go to Europe. They're busking around Europe doing that. And he cut a couple of EPs, 10-inch vinyl records, and on the Topic label in the UK. And those got back to the States. And Bob Dylan did 1 year in college in Minnesota. And this chick had those. He stole these album, these not out EPs. They're in between a 45.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And 10 inchers. And shit, they learn how to do this. So Dylan, just a little short Jewish guy born Robert Zimmerman from respectable parents in Minnesota, reinvents himself and goes to, and comes up with this whole wild story about he rambled around the West, which he did not. He just went right to New York. But he did get to Dave Van Ronk, the Pope of Greenwich Village.
Yep.
We could do a whole show on Dave Van Ronk. And Van Ronk tells him, because Bob's like, I'm going to be the new Woody Guthrie and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, Ramblin' Jack's
already... He's already there.
Done that.
Yeah.
And then right about this time, Jack comes back from Europe, because now Woody's sick. And Woody's the last 10 years of his life, he was lucid, but he could not sing or play.
Yeah.
Arlo never heard his dad sing or play live at all.
Really? I didn't know that.
Arlo will tell you, he learned from Jack and his dad's records. And when Jack came back to the States to see Woody, here's Bob. And then somehow they, Bob and Jack get apartments next to each other somewhere. And then this is the middle tail end of the folk scene.
Yeah.
Gertie's and all those great folk clubs in Greenwich Village. Bob decides, well, that's when Bob decided he had to start writing, and then that's Bob's career took off, and Jack's went all kitey wampus. That's a whole other story. Now, how I met Jack was 30 years later or whatever. I know Jack. I don't know a lot about him. I have a couple of his records. I know his story, and I'm living in Hermosa Beach, California. I'm newly divorced. I got into an electric band with some guys. Two of the guys toured in Greg Allman's touring band, solo touring band. I don't think they're 10. They're probably younger than me now, but they were like 10, 15 years older than me then. So I'm thinking I'm...
The elder statesman
right
you're
away,
hanging out with.
It went right back into, this guy's getting this money, that money, not enough money. This guy needs the cocaine. It was insanity. And I just, it was so disheartening. It kind of hit me that I needed to, I always envied the guys that could do it by themselves, the singer-songwriters. And I didn't know how to do that instinctively or naturally. And I figured out some old Neil Young songs and woodshedded as they, and figured out how to do it and started doing that. And then discovered this whole scene. Especially it was on High Tone Records out of Oakland, California. But Dave Alvin was on that label. Tom Russell was on that label. Chris Smither was on that label at the time. Ramblin' Jack was on the label at the time. Big Sandy and the Flyrite on the board. A couple of old blues guys were on that label at the time. And my next door neighbor was a carpenter. And I needed to make something with so that we could do a carpentry show too, but I don't want to digress. I get to know this guy, and we're doing some projects together, some for me, some for him. An old retired guy.
Now, this is down Hermosa Beach,
yeah. And a couple of times I hear Jack and a Ramblin' and a blah blah throughout our comp, but the last thing in my mind is that this guy would know who Ramblin' Jack is, one of those things. And I'm sure. Because I live next door, and I got my Les Paul and Marshall. I wasn't an acoustic guy then. I was just a lead guitar player going crazy when I'm just playing along with records and stuff because I was lonely. And one day I finally – are you talking about Ramblin' Jack Elliott? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, you know Ramblin' Jack? I go, I don't know him, but I
– Yeah.
And he goes, oh, well, he was the best man at my daughter's wedding. He's best friends with my daughter's husband, and they – Charlie, who's Charlie Parker, not the beret wearing
not the,
jazz cat, is dead, but Charlie, who's a boat builder, master carpenter in Sausalito. Yada, da, da, da. And so the next time Ramblin' Jack comes through town, he would usually other venues, but he almost always plays McCabe's, the famous guitar shop there in Santa Monica. I get to meet him and his wife, Jan, at the time, who was much younger. And the next time I get to meet him again, and I swear to God, one night at the show, he was telling the story of how his RV caught on fire and burned down, and he no longer has his RV. And this is stupid because I'm not one of those kind of people, but I was like, I should probably work with Jack. One of those weird feelings, like, yeah, I'll probably work with Jack. I should offer my services. And I'm like, why the hell? But I should admit, I worked in the film business at the time. I was managing big-time TV commercials and shit, and I've done musicals. I know the business. So it wasn't far-fetched that I couldn't handle it or anything. But anyhow, months, maybe a year later, Charlie Parker calls me up. Hey, were you serious when you said you would help Jack out on the road or whatever if he needed it? Because for some reason I mentioned it way back then. And I go, well, of course, you know. I think, well, Jan's in the hospital. He's sick. He's got a couple of gigs in L.A. He's got a gig out in Ventura County, and he needs somebody. I'm like, well, yeah, you know. And he said, well, did you smoke? And I'm like, well, cigarettes. You know, I'm like, no. He goes, and he, well, okay, well, don't, good, because he does. And what's your car? I forget, what's your car? Tell him the car. And he goes, and don't tell him you're a musician. I'm like, okay. Got it.
So he's just needing a lift.
Yeah, he needs help, you know,
who's Janice?
Jan. Jan was his wife. Okay. She died. She was in the she was the beginning liver failure from alcohol abuse. Yeah. And Jack was
for
no help.
For those that don't know, you know.
That's a whole other. God bless Jan. And Jan was very kind to me too when Jack didn't know who I was. And the next thing I know, it was probably the next day or the day after. I think it was a Saturday morning, and I was on a film gig, so I came home and drank it up the night before. And this is before all of our cell phones, so it was the old school telephone with the micro cassette, where you can hear them when they're giving you the message if you got the volume up. He called, hey, this is Garrett Rowland. This is Ramblin' Jack Elliott. And I'm just like, huh? I go, I'm not answering that. You know, just like, there's no friggin' way I'm answering that. A, I don't want to ruin the taping of it. And B, I don't really know what to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I call and he goes, yeah, I need a help. Can you pick me up at the John Wayne Airport in Orange County? I got to get out of that. And that's how I got to know. Went on the road with him then. And then it all went well. And he kept calling me for a while. Jan, unfortunately, died in the meanwhile. He recorded a song of mine with me in my garage CD I made on a cassette machine. And we've been friends ever since.
Amazing, man.
Just saw him in Napa County with Gail Steiger, local luminary. As I was coming down from Oregon on my way to San Francisco, he was at a cowboy poetry gathering up there. Anyway, so that's how I got on with Jack.
Interesting. Now, okay, let's back up a little bit here. After college, you're still playing music through college?
I actually did take the dive and cut off my hair and put a monkey suit on and joined the corporate world.
In what fashion?
I first worked for a roadway trucking company, the Nationwide trucking company, at their hub terminal. In Jesus Christ, right near Midway Airport, Bedford Park, Illinois.
Now, what were you doing in college? What was
I had a business degree.
Business. That's where you
wanted
into.
To play rock and roll.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't know I was going to be suckered into telling the truth. I had every opportunity to go to L.A. and be a junkie in the street and be in Guns N' Roses. Time.
No, you had to get an MBA.
So you get your business degree, you join corporate world. Are you still playing?
Yeah, but not really.
Just
for fun,
tooling around?
Yeah. No, I kind of got out of it.
Yeah. And how long did that last?
Barely two years.
The button-down world of Garrett Rowland.
Well, I had a girlfriend I was in love with, and you thought lived in the suburbs with her, and then everything blew up, and that's when I went to visit a buddy and
in California.
I came to Flagstaff, Prescott, in Denver as well before that, and
doing a little rambling at your own.
I had one last buddy in Hermosa Beach to visit, and then I got time to figure out something from there, and then his buddy, his roommate rather, worked in the film business and asked me to come to the set one day. He was working in the art department on some gig, and I ended up getting work.
Doing what? What transitioned from the business to rambling the countryside to working in the film business? What did you start doing though?
Just that right there.
Yeah, but what were you doing for the films?
Then it was art department, which is set decoration, set design. Basically, you're just a mover moving furniture around on that gig. It was
independent, or were you working in the studio system, or
a freelance? Yeah, always. And that progressed. I started becoming a production assistant, and then we're starting the prop guy. I did all kinds. I did everything, driving trucks.
Ground up.
And then by the end of it, I was line producing and production managing. All free. I never worked more than 6 months out of the year. Yeah. But it allowed me to go out on the road with Ramblin' Jack and lose money.
Gotcha.
work,
pad your account, and then go out on the road and blow it all.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I got a buddy of mine. He's been on the show a couple of times. Who, from the early '60s up until he retired in, I don't know, mid late '90s, worked in the studio system in the art department as a set painter, and bounced from. But he was employed by the studios, but he worked for a few different ones over the years. Loved it, had a ball doing it, but. Was tied into the system and didn't get to wander around like you did.
Yeah, I never went union, and I had two great runs with a really slow spot in the middle, but it's all freelance, and if you can get it's all very cyclical, especially in the I mostly work commercials. And that's usually a 5 year between hip ad agencies and hip producers, and they just come and they go. And if you're on the wrong end of, and a couple of, if you get into the right sort of rhythm, which I did, because all those people, to me, it was just like, and no disrespect to it, but it was like working at a gas station.
Yeah.
It was just a job.
Yeah.
But it was a lucrative job and always a beginning and an end. And I'm sure.
And allowing you to play music on the dead time. Or between jobs.
Right, right. And that's what allowed me to do that. But, you know, you don't have any security and you don't have any benefits and blah, blah,
now,
blah.
Now, at this point, you're playing with other guys in bands.
I've been solo for a long time.
No, when you were doing when you were still doing the film work, the commercial work?
When I first got out there, there was a band that morphed into Wood... And they made second in Spin magazine for the worst band in the of the world.
Did
for
you
the
say
year.
The name of that band again?
Wood.
Thank you.
They were great, man. It started as sort of straight up punk, and they wanted some. They thought I was this metal guy. I wasn't. But
I wanted you to say the word again.
And then it morphed into some real avant garde stuff, but. They made a real sick video. You look it up. It's got to be in Spin. Wood, man. They were one of the underground. They opened up for Tool. They got some good opportunities.
So when did you opt to go strictly solo?
It was weird how it all happened. Just like I said, I go, I got to figure out how to sing some songs and play because I still crave the band thing, but I was scared to be all alone in front on a stage with a guitar.
Yeah.
In my half-assed voice, but I figured that out, and then being on the road with Jack, I learned more than, I mean, not like lessons, but just how to work a crowd and how to be a solo guy.
How to do it without
And then I got into all these
buffer.
Americana artists, and they go, wow, there is a lot of good music out there. There are a lot of great songs. They're just nobody knows about. No, you have to look for them. Well, it's at a grassroots level.
Touch on that. Who are some of the greats that people don't know about?
I mentioned him before, but right at that time, Dave Alvin, who was the guitar player and writer in the Blasters, the 80s, a roots rock band. His brother was the singer. But he's got two Grammys as a solo artist. Not that Grammy is in a... But
his songs. Well, that's here's what blew my mind. Just like I told you that Chicago radio, both AM and FM, and my uncle car jipper with cassettes, I would find just that whole experience where you think you know a little about music, and then you hear live at Leeds, and you're like, holy, that's not Journey. <You know? laughs> And then Ramblin' Jack came. They called it. There's a band now, I think, called Monsters of Folk. But this was just a little West Coast barnstorming tour of these artists on the High Tone label at the time. Robert Cray was the other guy they discovered. Anyhow, so it was Ramblin' Jack, who I knew, and but I hadn't worked. I didn't know him I got to know him or work. I wasn't working with him yet. There's Dave Alvin, Tom Russell, and Chris Smither. Chris Smither was a Cambridge folk musician who wrote Love You Like a Man, and that Bonnie Raitt covers, and I feel the Same, another one Bonnie Raitt, any great songwriter. Anyhow, yeah. It was those four guys, completely unrehearsed, but it was, they would try to do a song together. It was a, kind of a disaster. And what's that? What?
That's Cream of the Crop. That's like the review of what...
Oh, yeah, there you go. And Cream of the Crap. The last just showed me his phone. And then they would each go down the line. Like, Jack would do a song, Dave would do a song, Tom would do it. So this is the first time I'm hearing these guys. I saw Blasters open for Eric Clapton on the Money and Cigarettes tour.
What year was that?
Late 80s in Kalamazoo, Michigan with the Blasters. It was so, I didn't know who Albert Lee was. Albert Lee was a guitar player.
Yeah.
Clapton's just strumming guitar. He's so high on drunk and heroin and booze. He's just strumming cowboy chords through Layla, and it's Albert Lee doing all this stuff, which if I knew who Albert Lee was, but I was an Eddie Van Halen guy at that time.
I saw the Blasters at the Greek in Berkeley.
Eric almost left us. He was almost out of there.
And I told Dave Alvin that story, and he goes, I think it was Bill Bateman, the Blasters drummer. Well, in Detroit, right before the Kalamazoo show or out, something like that, he goes, well, Bateman had to play drums because whoever Clapton's drummer was so f***ing out of it, he couldn't play drums. But anyhow, so Dave Alvin plays King of California, a song I cover a lot. And then Tom Russell does Navajo Rug. And then Chris Smither does one of his greats, like Jesus. I'm trying to think of one of his songs, "Happier Blue," and just songs, just like "Who's Next," just where you just go, "Why aren't these hits?" I mean, they're acoustic solo settings, so it's not the bombast of hard classic rock, but same impact as far as the delivery, the writing, and you're like, "Holy, there's a whole other world out there." And then you find Townes Van Zandt. And then you find Guy Clark. And then that's where Steve Earle comes from, those guys. And then Bob. And it just goes. Yeah. And you know, Townes Van Zandt loved I was thinking of the blues guy down there, Elmore James. Mm. He just goes. And the soft blues guy. Anyway, I digress, but that's.
No, it's fine.
And I go the same way because I have all those.
Yeah,
the rock, the punk, and all those folk guys. And what's Americana? And I'm like, well, that's what the Eagles was when you weren't going to tribute band concerts because you supported a band that actually was original at that time, and you haven't listened to anything else since, evidently.
I think the best description that I heard of that whole thing that Graham Parsons and the Eagles and the Flying Burrito, but you know that those bands came out of, is that it was like country music played by city boys, you know, and it really, you know, and it, but they didn't really have a name for it, you know, like it wasn't, you know, it was, and I don't even know what they called it then. Now we call it Americana because, you know, because that's the label. It all fits there, you know. But
it was cosmic cowboy psychedelic country rock.
Ray Wiley Hubbard, you know.
Ray Wiley Hubbard. There's another
original
one.
Cosmic Cowboy, that guy.
Terry Allen.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Asleep
Some
at the
of these
Wheel.
Guys, man. You
know, Asleep at the Wheel. You know.
Jesus, those early Willie albums. Yeah, yeah. Post Nashville early Willie albums.
What brought you back to Prescott full time? Or are you here full time?
Oh, I've been here 6 years now, maybe seven. That's Ted. That's my old friend, Teddy Ballgame. Ballgame!
Pilgrim.
Okay.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Everybody's looking at you like, what the hell, Mitch?
I thought I was throwing my voice.
You were.
Hey, like I said, well, the 19 years, actually, that I lived in L.A., my addiction, it was my escape from L.A. once or twice a year was to come up here.
Yeah.
From there, and then my that's a whole other story. Everything was falling apart. I couldn't do the, didn't want to work in Hollywood anymore, and yada, yada, yada.
Just reached the peak.
Heartbreak in my life, blah, 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 and just needed to get out.
Yeah.
And my cousin, Dixie, he left, and she was here alone, and she didn't need assisted living or anything, but she was old.
Yeah.
Why don't you just come out here? And it was just like an easy.
Yeah.
An easy no-brainer, like, why didn't I do this last year? I would have another $10,000 in the bank if I didn't have to stay. But, so that was it, and I've been here for a while. You know.
Yeah. So where can folks hear you now? You got a regular spot, or do you
not
play
super
where you
regular.
Can?
I play every other month at The Point. The first Wednesday of December is my next one, a week from today. Or a month from
today. Dude, you're in rotation, man.
Or no, not today. Wednesday. They only have music on Wednesday.
I don't know. You're in rotation, though, man.
It's so Wednesday out there. I'm actually playing Friday at the Country Club, the Canyon.
That's where
Capital Canyon
Club. Yeah,
that's where you've members been playing only. There a lot. You've been playing there a lot.
I played at Addiction. I don't have anything else the regular right now. I've been in this massive, massive recording project, so I'm...
Nice. What do we got to look forward to coming out? Is it your stuff, or are you playing
stuff,
on others?
Yeah, it's all mine.
Yeah? Like, is that what you... Because you were back in California just recently, a couple weeks ago, right?
I was on a West Coast trip from Oregon all the way down.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. A couple gigs out in L.A. And a couple of weddings.
That was really cool. You took Candace with you. Like,
well, I didn't take her with me.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm just saying you got her a gig is actually what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
That, there was nothing beyond that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just,
another
just got
show.
Her a gig.
No, the Cinema Bar in Culver City. Yeah. It's a good, great roots music, tiny little club out there. And I played out there semi-regularly. Yeah. And
so what do you got coming out of these recording sessions?
Well, it's I'm way behind. If this was 2006, I'd be right on schedule. Artistically, my life went off track. I've got about 25, 30 songs that I just never demoed up properly.
Yeah.
I just mapped it out and did arrangements how I'd like to hear them.
You've been involved with Ted here, too. That really that was really keeping you busy.
Yeah, we need to get Ted over here. Did you see him? He's right over there. It was some young girl. It's probably a nephew.
Oh, that Ted.
I don't know. I'm talking
Teddy,
about
Ted. You could probably text him.
No, I'll just call him.
And
Teddy Leonard's over there.
Good morning!
No, hold on. Before they kick us out of here.
Oh.
Well, you know.
I didn't know what Ted you were talking about. I couldn't see him. Yeah. He was hiding.
I don't know. Maybe he's
hiding,
like,
on
hiding from us. And
yeah, don't yell again.
Don't do that.
Lady, don't yell again.
Ball game.
No, that's Ashley that he's with. Yeah.
Who's Ashley?
Ashley Stovall. She's the GM of the Rattlers or the Suns, and she's the president.
I don't have my phone.
He's picking it up right now.
Anyway. Anyway.
Yeah, you better not let that go to voicemail. I'm staring right at you.
Oh, my. Ball game.
Is that Ashley with you? Is that Ashley with you?
They told
Come
me
on
not
over.
To yell.
That's so funny.
So do I. Garrick Rollins said. Garrick Rollins said he taught you everything you know.
Oh, what a treat!
Okay,
these are the
all
things
right.
You can't
Bye.
Rehearse.
He's been ignoring us for all. He's like, no, don't
no,
look
that's
don't look at him. They won't see.
Ashley Stovall used to. She was the assistant general manager of the Sundogs here, the hockey team. Now she's the assistant to the president of the Rattlers down in Phoenix and the GM of the Suns that start tomorrow.
But yeah, like,
really?
Is
he not gonna?
No, he said he'll be over here in a minute. Okay. No, he said he'll be here in a minute.
Now they're in a meeting for tomorrow. They got their home opener tomorrow.
I don't care. I'm on a freaking podcast.
I'm trying to.
Is there a name?
Get Matt to understand that, like he's gone.
Is there a brand name of this?
It's too late.
It's the Mile High Show.
The Mile High Show.
Surprised it wasn't taken by a Denver show, but yeah, it was still open.
When I met you,
you'll get $1 million.
When I met you, you were running the open mic.
The Brick and the Bone.
At Brick and Bones. And actually, when I met you, you came over to Don Cheek's open mic, right? And you would, like, I think I went on before you, I think. And I got off stage, and you got up there, and I was like, cool, like another one. I got to know this guy.
I remember it was actually not Don. It was even better. It was Michael Lewis.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
At the Mexican place,
JJ's,
where he was trying to do his songwriter night.
No, that was. And that I just popped JJ's, in. That was El Charo.
The Charos, yeah.
El Charo, yeah, yeah.
And I just happened to be coming by, and I played his. Then I think that's when I met you the first time.
I don't know. I just remember.
At least when we talked civilly for the first time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember, like, I come in, you get up there, and you were playing. The way I remember it, I saw you playing that J200 up there. You know, and I was like, look at that dude. Look at that great guitar. Listen to that song. That's really cool. You know?
So do you do a website or anything like that? Any social media where people can follow you, or they just got to follow you physically?
Do people do that now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm catching up. These songs I'm doing, I've got a guy that I'm going to – the purpose – I'm not making an album of all these songs, but I'm just catching up so I can pitch them to this producer, Rick Shea. In L.A., great singer-songwriter in his own right. Used to be in Dave Alves' band. I'm just getting all these songs together, handing them over to him. And then from there, we'll decide, hey, let's make an album with these things. And then I'll have an album, and then I'll hopefully get the rest of my a website up.
If people want to hear what you got going on and want to see you and hear you perform, the best bet is just
see me live.
Keep cruising around and see where you pop up, or
or if you're listening, I know I'm a little old school, but if you send me an email, I do an old school email list.
How do they reach out to you if I have a gig?
It's my first and last name together, Garrick Rawlings. It's GARRICKRAWLINGS. @mac.com
Gotcha.
So Garrick Rawlings @mac.com and then I'll
sign up for the newsletter.
And then when I get the website, and then once I get done with the recording, I'll start probably releasing a song. Here's what I did with this, and here's what I did with that.
So
that kind of thing.
So anyway, yeah. So if anybody's been wondering what that screaming noise is when you drive, like, you know, back and forth between Prescott. That's Garrick, like, venting because, like, the recording process is finally gone.
Yeah, there's a lot of swearing.
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock in the morning. Is that a coyote? No, I think it's Garrick. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Somehow screaming helps.
All right. Any other things you want to drop in? I think we covered the rambling history of Garrick Rawlings.
Dude, that's the short version.
Well, and that's the thing. That's one of the things I want to do with this show and that we've been able to do is kind of introduce listeners to different people, not to get the whole story, but to say, okay, you like that? Now find out where they're playing, where they're performing, where they're reading, where they're painting, whatever.
I should say, there's
and get out there.
The folk sessions, Tom Agostino, they've got a Christmas concert. December 2nd or something. Don't say that. Whenever that folk sessions, look it up.
I'll reach out to Tom.
Tom
and
Gail Steiger's doing that, and I'm going to do the folk sessions show next week. Mm. I think Thursday we tape it, and he broadcasts Saturday or something.
I think so.
So, yeah, I'm slowly coming out of the cave, getting back into the world.
Starting
with Mile High. Can only go up from here.
You ain't lying.
No, that's just
when you're scraping the bottom, where else is there to go but up? What do you got coming up, Les?
the next like
stacking firewood.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I was doing today.
Pretty much. No, actually, the next thing I have coming up is the fourth annual
signal from ball game.
Ball game, it's funny. The fourth annual Danny Rhodes tribute concert. The 26th of December, the day after Christmas.
That's what he was rehearsing for today.
Yeah.
Wait, Les Reed was rehearsing?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know it's weird, but
must be a money game.
Yeah, it's actually fun. It really is fun. Danny Rhodes is probably one of the my favorite blues guy out here, and his stuff is it's not, you know, three chords and a cloud of dust. It's like he
that reminds me of
anyway,
my favorite.
Yeah, anyway, but that's the next Dusty one I have. Rhodes. That's the one I'm having. I'll be in Cottonwood at Main Stage, and we're getting ready for that. Looks like it's going to be a good, like a really, really good show this year. We have, the Jerome Ukulele Orchestra and Shree.
Tommy.
Tom Gears, a bunch of other people. Dude, like, I would like for you to come out for
Tommy
the jam.
Tommy rocks, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to do it.
Wait, what's the jam?
I know, there's some people that come up and
she's
there's
from
some
Kansas.
Acts, and we do,
Kansas?
You know, yeah. There'll be some bands.
I said she's from Kansas.
Sorry, we're interrupting Les.
At the end of the night, there'll be a jam, man. You know, so like, come on out if you want.
All right, I'll stick links up to that. I think we're good.
I think so.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. No, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. No. Well, that was it. That was episode number 115. Thanks for tuning in. Please find Garrick, find Les as they play around town. Listen to them. Support local musicians. Support local venues that support those musicians. And support the Mile High Show. This episode was brought to you by Amazon. Use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com for all your online shopping. It's free to you, and it helps us out. Also, the Audible link at milehighshow.com. Click it. Use the code MILEHIGH at checkout for your free Audible download, a free 30-day trial, and we get a little thank you from both Amazon and Audible when you do that. And thank you to the good folks at Gabby's Grill for putting up with us. Support our show. Give us a rate. Give us a review on iTunes. Drop us a line at milehighshow.com on the Contact Us page. Let us know who you would like to hear from, who you would like to listen to, where you think would be a good spot for us to record, all that good stuff. At milehighshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk at you soon. Dreams and this lovers and dreams fade away. Lovers, they promise forever they'll stay. But when you add it all up at the end of the day, it's a crapshoot at best. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you say. Another day, another dollar, another deal gone down, much to my misfortune, you smile and you stuck. It's better there than over here.